Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower on a Monday morning, and that's when we review all the new movies and tell you all about the box office results from the past weekend. And we've got some box office stuff that we're going to talk about first, and then we'll get to the new movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number in the text. You can also check us out on Twitter. But the best way to stay connected is to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me. They write for eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com, and we review the movies every week here on WGN. So let's welcome Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about the box office first. Not a lot of people went to the movies this weekend.
No. This is one of the more underwhelming box office weekends in some time I can actually remember.
Yeah. I mean, really crazy. And boy, did Vince Vaughn take one on the chin.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
man.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about number one in the on the box office was Chappie, but with just $13.3 million, not very impressive. Is there an explanation for that, Aaron?
The only thing that I can figure, I mean, because there are the people that are still Blomkamp fans, I guess, who are out there just vociferously defending this movie, but. I think that the confusion in the advertising kind of might have played a factor into this, because if you remember how they first started advertising this film, it was sort of like cutesy, short-circuity kind of way. You know, your robot learns to think and behave like a human, and
right.
Almost there's something childlike, almost ET-ish in a way, the way it was being advertised, and then it sort of revealed itself as another sort of hard R-rated Neil Blomkamp, war machine versus the,
political allegory.
Exactly. Yeah. That it's sort of like, oh, it's going to be in just another one of these. I've seen this movie before. I don't really have much interest in it.
Yeah. Boy, it really didn't do well, though. I mean, $13.3 million. It was a very small audience that I saw it with.
Mm-hmm.
Very small. So
yeah, that number really surprised me.
Number two is Focus, $10 million, making its two-week total $34.5 million. Not good numbers for the Will Smith.
No, it's going to end up being the lowest, depending on how you view his role in Bagger Vance, but the lowest.
Oh, God.
I know. The lowest box office total for a movie where he was, really sort of the star of the movie.
Wow. All right. And then third was the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. $8.6 million. Now, I think that's pretty good considering what the movie is.
Yeah, that's the success story of the top 10, actually. It's not a whole lot of money, but it was under 2,000 screens, I think. So, people who, I guess, showed up for the first one or sort of made it sort of a surprise little hit, did show up this opening weekend.
Yeah, none of us saw it, though.
Right. No, we're not the target audience for this.
Well, Colin, you saw the first one. I remember you kind of liked the first one, right?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you a single scene in it or anything. I can't. It's like I kind of forgot about it when it was over. But,
yeah.
It's not bad.
Well, the deal to me, looking at both of these movies, it's like, I mean, you can't really go wrong with that cast.
No, not really.
I mean, it's a great cast. There's a lot of really great, talented people in it. So
the reviews that I'm seeing, though, is that this is a cash grab. Nobody's really into it.
Okay,
that's kind of what the gist of the reviews that I'm reading about it. So,
okay. Number four, Kingsman: The Secret Service, $8.3 million. This thing is going to make over $100 million. How the hell did that happen?
I don't know. The only thing that was sort of interest out there, basically, other than people who, hadn't seen American Sniper yet.
Yeah. Jeez. Number five, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, continuing to make money.
Doing very well.
I mean, crazy. $7 million, bringing its total. It's almost up to $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Going after number six on the list.
Number six on the list is 50 Shades of Grey, $5.6 million. Now, the drop-off on 50 Shades of Grey was massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, from week to week, it's just, the first weekend was, $85 million?
Yeah.
And It's very possible it's not going to double that, which is actually very rare, no matter what the total is. Mm.
And then number seven, McFarlane USA, $5.3 million, bringing its total up to $29.4 million. Number eight, the surprisingly not bad Lazarus Effect, $5.1 million, bringing its two-week total to $17.4 million. Not good, but it didn't cost anything.
No, it cost $3 million.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's a hit.
I actually thought it was pretty good. I was surprised. Number nine, The Duff, with $4.8 million, and then Man, oh my mm-hmm. God, coming in at number ten, the new Vince Vaughn comedy Unfinished Business only made $4.8 million. That's kind of horrible.
Yeah, this is the worst opening in Vaughn's career. And you can consider that the next worst movie on his list, opening weekend-wise for a wide release, was Return to Paradise.
Ugh.
Him and Heche, you know?
Yeah.
And consider that made $2.4 million opening weekend, but it was out under 1,000 screens.
Oh.
Okay.
Now, what's been happening with Vince Vaughn recently? Have his movies decreased in popularity each time he releases one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it hasn't exactly been an inspiring list of movies since the Dodgeball and Wedding Crashers days, where he really was sort of on top of the world 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, since then, you look at movies like. The Breakup did very well. So, that was 2006.
Yeah.
Then Fred Claus, in 2007. Four Christmases and Couples Retreat both did very well. But then he had The Dilemma, which was a film that we kind of surprisingly liked.
That's actually a movie I like.
Right. And ever since then, he was a part of The Watch, which was a bomb. The Internship did horrible a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Delivery Man the same year didn't do very well.
Same director as this one, right?
Same director as Delivery Man, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, True Detective cannot get here fast enough.
Yeah. He's probably counting the days now.
Oh, yeah.
When True Detective comes on, because he's part of that. Well, it's interesting because, you're talking about the movies that open in the first week of March. And I'm looking at your list here. The Alice in Wonderland made $116 million.
Yeah.
Total or just opening weekend?
3-day weekend.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow. The Lorax made 70.
Mm-hmm.
Watchmen 55. The sequel to 300 made $45 million this opening weekend?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Surprisingly so.
Wild Hogs inexplicably made a lot of money. I still, to this day, I can't even comprehend how any human being would enjoy Wild Hogs.
Was it John Travolta, Martin Lawrence, Tim Allen, and who was the other one?
I don't even remember.
Colin, do you remember the other Wild Hog?
I remember
Macy,
know
wasn't it?
Macy, yeah, it was Macy. Yeah, I remember Tobolowsky's in it. That's the only thing I remember is that Stephen Tobolowsky's in it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He has the only funny line in the whole film.
Which was?
Doom, isn't it?
Tobolowsky, yeah, it's like that. Yeah, we learned how to be cops by playing Doom.
Yes.
That was it.
All right. I remember that line.
Rango made $38 million on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
1000 BC made 35.8. Mr. Peabody and Sherman made 32. Good Lord. Bringing Down the House made 31. Boy, I remember that was a huge hit. What a terrible movie that was.
One of the worst of Steve Martin's career.
Oh, perhaps, yes. The Pacifier. I remember Lorelei's in that movie. And isn't there like a duck in it?
Yes.
It's Lorelei, Vin Diesel, and a duck.
Mm-hmm.
Starsky and Hutch, $28.1 million. Jack the Giant Slayer, $27 million. Be Cool. Man, Travolta's made some bad movies.
A couple of Vince Vaughn movies in there, too.
Yeah. The Adjustment Bureau. I actually like that movie. $21.1 million. Project X, That's not the movie with Matthew Broderick and the monkeys.
No.
Which is actually a good movie. 21 million. We Were Soldiers, 20. The Mexican, 20. Hidalgo, 18. And then the list goes on.
You see how far Chappie is down on that list. That's the thing that surprised me, because for some reason, whether it be the movie or just the time of the year, March comes around and all of a sudden people start going to the movies.
Yeah.
And you see on that list, it's not exactly a great list of movies. 10,000 BC, for God's sake.
That's terrible.
Did 35 million.
Yeah.
So for Chappie not to somehow be in the 20s,
well, Chappie,
that was a huge shock to me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Chappie shows up below Brooklyn's Finest.
Yeah, and College Road Trip.
College Road Trip.
With Martin Lawrence and Raven Simone.
Oh, what a terrible movie that was.
All right, more money than Chappie.
Guys, hang on. We got movies to review, and then we'll follow up, and we'll finish up the box office report as well. Colin and Eric are here. And it's movie review time, as we do every Monday morning right here on 720 WGN. We'll take a quick break and come back with more. Yeah. All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. And on Monday mornings, every Monday morning, we review the new movies. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. We were just talking about the box office returns. A very bad box office weekend. The number one movie in the country was Chappie, but it only made $13.3 million. Historically, not very good money for this opening weekend. But there are other movies to talk about and other movies to review, which we will do right now. So let's welcome Eric and Colin back to the show. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right. Well, listen, Eric, why don't you tell us about Chappie?
Okay, well, this is the newest film from Neil Blomkamp, who stormed on the scene some years ago with District 9, a film that ended up so popular, ended up getting a nomination for Best Picture. Then a couple years later, followed it up with the very anticipated Elysium, and that turned out to be a disappointment for many people, considering how much everyone liked District 9. And so here's Chappie. It's again set in the future of, or at least somewhat of the future of Johannesburg. If this sounds familiar to anyone. The police force there has been replaced by robots, droids, who are doing a very efficient job of rooting out gang violence, criminals, so much that the robotics company that manufactures the droids is doing very well. In fact, the head designer of the robot, played by Dev Patel, is a little disenchanted with his own creation. He is very much interested in creating a robot that has more human feelings, that can learn, not just be, a sort of a droid for the system, if you will. And he's in the midst of developing the software, and he's actually denied the opportunity to do experiments by the head of the corporation, played by Sigourney Weaver. And this is all taking place at a time when some gang members are indebted to some even more vicious gang members. So they decide to kidnap Dev Patel's designer in the hopes that he will have the key to shutting down the entire droid police force so they can pull off the heist they need to pay off the even badder people in the world. Well, this actually gives him the opportunity to test this software on a droid that was put out of commission early in the film. As he uploads the software, him and these criminals are met with a droid that behaves very much like a newborn baby. Is very just frightened, almost like a puppy. Starts to begin to soak up the knowledge that they're able to provide him. And while Dev Patel's character wants to, teach the robot goodness and all happy joy feelings in the world, the criminals want to show Chappie the darker side of humanity and actually, throw him out there in the midst of all the idiocy and the violence out there and sort of, hone them to the plot that they have to pull off this heist. Meanwhile, at the robotics company, you have Dev Patel's competitor in the same office, played by Hugh Jackman, who sports a mullet.
Oh, fantastic mullet.
You really enjoy that mullet,
do
you?
Oh, man.
Okay. His name, I believe, is Dick Jones. And he is actually designed a bigger, badder robot that very much looks like the Ed 209 from RoboCop. And in the hopes of, he's not very happy when he finds out that there's a robot out there that actually has human feelings. He finds this a threat, and he wants to use this opportunity to put his robot into commission. So there you go. You have a lot of plot going into a movie that has very little intelligence going on inside its own head. We talked about the advertising for this film a little while ago, and you can kind of tell that Sony didn't quite know how to sell this movie to the public, because on one hand, it wants to be this film about artificial intelligence and how it can be used for good and bad in the world. And at the same time, it's another one of Blomkamp's familiar stories. Not that he's had too many. He's had three movies now, and they're all pretty much the same, where you have this outsider character who is part of the establishment at one point, but then he's going to be used as a weapon against the establishment later on in the film, all leading to a very bloody third act confrontation. And this is a film that is really kind of all over the map. It's for the larger portion of the movie where Chappie develops his new personality, and he's voiced by Blomkamp's regular contributor Charles O'Copley, really becomes a real annoyance in the film. So much unlike Johnny Five from Short Circuit. He's just a character in itself that is just very schizophrenic and annoying, as is most of the characters in this movie. They range from annoying to really stupid. And like I said, I joke that Hugh Jackman is basically playing Dick Jones from RoboCop, but that's what he's doing. And I don't know what is with Blomkamp, but he seems to have this thing where he likes to take really good actors and make them give the worst performance of their career. He did it with Jodie Foster in Elysium, and now he does it with Hugh Jackman in Chappie. I don't know about you, but it's hard for me to think that he's the only villain in history to go through the entire movie wearing shorts. and so I was completely distracted by that, and I think he's pretty awful in the movie. And by the end of this movie, I was really kind of walked out kind of hating it. I am kind of done with the whole Blomkamp experiment. He signed that Alien deal right on the cusp of this, because he's been going out in the press saying how much he screwed up Elysium. When Alien comes out, I'm sure he's going to be saying how much he screwed up Chappie.
It's funny that that we had that conversation last week about him taking over the Alien franchise before we saw the movie.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. So, all right, what about you, Colin? What'd you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Eric on this one. This is really just a pretty hollow film. Eric brought up the characters being, just that. Very much so. I mean, you got the scientist, and that's it. He's the scientist. Hugh Jackman is the bad guy. Sigourney Weaver is the bureaucrat who has to say no to everybody. And that's it. That's all that defines them. There's really nothing more to them. And the criminals are also just kind of annoying. And just as the movie's storyline unfolds, I just found myself shaking my head going, how did this screenplay pass, all these hands? And everyone thought, yeah, it works. These criminals are the kinds that are going to come up with the idea to kidnap the scientists behind all these RoboCops that are out there and get the remote control to turn them off. Really? This is what the movie is about? That just kept having that moment, like, really? You can put all the Hans Zimmer, Christopher Nolan score in there that you want. It doesn't mean your movie is going to come off being as intelligent as one of his films. And that's kind of, the movie's heavy-handedness, much like the heavy-handedness of Elysium and its allegories, really just kind of it really stands out even more, just how kind of empty it is, and how, you know, whatever allegory he's going for, whatever, you know, social commentary he's going for, really doesn't land anywhere. It's just kind of, you just kind of sit there thinking, well, I could be at home watching RoboCop and having a much better time.
Yeah. I guess I'm done with this guy. I guess that District 9, I still back that movie. I think that movie's absolutely terrific, and I really like it. But he makes the same movie over and over and over again, and each one gets less interesting than the last. Any movie that makes me remember Short Circuit, I want to punch. I mean, just like, come on, man. Do I really have to think about Steve Guttenberg while I'm watching this movie? I really don't want to. Really hollow, really annoying. Just, you know, the same sort of themes that he's done a million times. None of it is very effective. None of it was exciting. It's really long, too. I mean, is it over 2 hours?
It's like just the 2 hours.
But it just seems like...
feels much longer.
Oh, man. It's not a good movie, and I don't know what he's going to do with the Alien movie. Now I'm not, you know, at first I was like, oh, I'm intrigued, you know, because I loved District 9 so much, and, you know, Elysium I didn't like. But this movie sucks. So it's like, well, you know, now I'm not excited that he's going to take over the reins of the Alien movies.
I'm telling you, man, Ripley's going to team up with the aliens and going to be their queen and lead them against the company.
Is that what it's going to be? The company's going to be the bad guy, right? Is it going to take place in South Africa? Is that?
Oh, I'm sure. It's going to be in Johannesburg in the same slum as District 9 and Chappie. Yeah. You know, and if you're going to do a movie, because even the advertising was trying to make something there that really wasn't. This whole idea is like they trained Chappie to, you know, turn against the system that had failed them. Like, well, in this movie, the droids work pretty well. So it's not even like an allegory for if the droids had more feeling, they would make better decisions against the gang members.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even like an allegory for the modern state of the police force. It's just none of it's there. It's like the droids are working pretty well. Shut up, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. and you're right. I mean, it's so funny, Eric, that you mentioned, because I mean, I don't know to this day. You know, Elysium was on cable not too long ago, and I watched a few minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you guys know how I feel about Jodie Foster. We all feel about Jodie Foster.
All of us.
I mean, Jodie Foster is extraordinary. One of the greatest actresses that's ever lived, and I love everything she's done. But she's horrible in that movie. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the hell she's doing. I don't know what, I mean.
In such a limited role, too.
I know. It's like, why would he allow her to make those weird choices unless he said, hey, here's a good idea. Do this.
Right.
Terrible. Terrible. Yeah, and you're right about Hugh Jackman is horrible in it. So my dad's going to be disappointed because it's a Hugh Jackman movie with a robot, and he's not going to like it.
He's a big Real Steel fan.
Yeah, oh, my God. My dad loves Real Steel. It's like one of his favorite movies of all time.
Hey, better movie.
Oh, it's a much better movie. It's a much better movie. I bought it for him for his birthday, and he went nuts. He watches it all the time. He loves Real Steel. So, all right, well, there we go. That's the first movie we've reviewed for this week. We'll take a quick break. Eric, Colin, everybody, hang on. We got more movies to review right here. It's the movie reviews on a Monday morning on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here, and we shall return. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Colin and Eric join me from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com, and we review the movies every Monday morning and check out the box office. We did the box office report. Now we're reviewing the new movies. The first one that we reviewed is Chappie, which actually should be called Crappy. And we welcome Eric and Colin back. Colin?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Why don't you tell us about Road Hard?
All right. Well, Road Hard is the second film from Adam Carolla. His first film was The Boxer. The Hammer. He played a boxer in The Hammer. And that was back in 2007. And this one is also autobiographical, and that's a massive understatement this time. Carolla plays a comedian, a stand-up comic who is, you know, traveling around the country doing nightclub gigs. And he's been doing it for a while, and he used to be the host of a show called The Bro Show, that was not unlike The Man Show. And his co-host, played by Jay Mohr, is now a big late night talk show host, and he's having a lot more success than Carolla. Adam Carolla is sort of stuck in this, going around on tour all around the country, because he has to support his daughter, who he still lives in the guest house of his house, where his wife lives. His wife is played by Ileana Douglas. And he's just trying to get off the road. He's trying to get his manager, to get him a full-time TV or movie gig, that will just sort of, ground him, in Los Angeles so that he doesn't have to keep traveling around the road. So this is a movie that is it's definitely made, by a comedian for comedians who can relate to being on the road a lot, staying in bad hotels and, dealing with airlines and stuff like that. And, Carolla has, if you listen to Adam Carolla's podcast on a regular basis, which I do, you can kind of see where a lot of the scenes are going to go before they even start. If you're familiar with all of his rants and about airlines and hotels and just, and have heard a lot of his stand-up stories, you kind of know where every joke is heading in this film. If you don't, it's probably a lot funnier. And that being said, it is a funny film. But it also kind of suffers from a lack of experience behind the scenes. Carolla is co-directed, is credited with being a co-director along with Kevin Hench, who directed The Hammer. And they both wrote the film. And I think they're slightly better writers than they are directors. There's a lot of sort of awkwardness in the editing. Carolla's performance is a little stiff at times when he, is trying to sort of deliver a zinger in the dialogue. It doesn't quite land. It's kind of hard to watch, but at the same time, there is something very endearing about, the story and a lot of the scenes in it. The movie tries for a sort of a romantic comedy angle midway through the film, and it doesn't quite work. Some of the characters a little too underdeveloped. But at the same time, he's cast this movie with some really funny people. I mean, David Alan Grier is, one of the funniest people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Does, his Maya Angelou bit, which is hysterical. So there is funny stuff in this film. If you're a fan of Carolla, you probably, you could check it out. If you're not, don't. So the movie is—it's not as good as The Hammer. It's not quite as solid as in the acting and the writing department, or in the directing. But it does have laughs, and it is kind of sweet, and so it's kind of a miss, kind of a mild recommendation. There's a reason why it's 50% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, and that's kind of how I feel about it. Mm. So yeah, it's only playing at the Patio Theater. And I guess Carolla was in town promoting it.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it Saturday night. He was there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at the patio and I saw it there. I got to tell you, maybe it was because I was with, like a packed house, a friendly audience.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I went with my friend Mike, who is a massive Adam Carolla fan, and we both had a pretty great time watching this movie. There's a lot of funny stuff in it. Now, and I agree with you, it's not the most brilliantly directed movie of all time, not the most original. If you're familiar with Carolla's stuff, clearly you're going to know this, but man, I laughed a lot during this movie. Identifying with, I've never done the road as a stand-up comedian, but I've done stand-up. And, so I can't speak to the whole traveling aspect of it, but it pretty much nails what it's like to be a stand-up comedian. And, You know, obviously Carolla's been doing it for many, many years. I thought Jay Mohr was great. I thought everybody in this movie was really, all the casting was great. There's a lot of really, really funny, talented people in this movie. Koechner is hilarious, by the way. Living in his house. And, you know, like Ileana Douglas, like casting Ileana Douglas, that's a really inspired choice. You know what I mean? I didn't expect, like, when when she showed up and I was like, wow, that's cool. She's in this movie. And again, it was a really friendly audience. You know, everybody was very excited because Carolla was there. So it was, you know, it's a different experience than maybe if you get it on pay-per-view. You know?
I watched a screener of it. So yeah, that wasn't the best.
Right. I mean, I saw it in a packed house at the beautiful patio theater on a Saturday night, and Carolla was there. So the experience is going to be a little bit better. But overall, I like it. I recommend it, and I think it's I think it's very, very funny. And any chance that people can get to go to the patio, I believe is a good thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, go out to the patio and watch Rode Hard. If you're an Adam Carolla fan, you're obviously going to like it. I thought it was actually very funny. So there you go. It was a great time too on Saturday night. And they were very, they were like, when we bought the tickets, when we went in to get the tickets at the front door, at the table, they were like, you know, the woman who like sold us the tickets, you know, it's BYOB. You want to go next door to the liquor store and bring some booze in? And we were like, oh. Okay, so that might have added, you know, to the,
to the
sure. Like went across. All right, I'm going to go next door and get a bottle of Jameson, and we'll probably enjoy this movie. So it was just it was really fun. They did a great job at the patio, and it was just the atmosphere was great. So that added to my enjoyment. Clearly, that added to the enjoyment of the film. So, but I liked it. Rode Hard. All right, we'll take a quick break, and after the news, Eric will review Unfinished Business, and we'll review Maps to the Stars. Right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. It's a Monday morning. We're reviewing the new movies. Monday morning, that means it's a jokey, 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 jokey time. My dad will be telling a joke. We will also hear the Blackhawks Express from last night's game and much more. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review movies, and we welcome them back. All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Vince Vaughn's fantastic epic, Unfinished Business?
If I must.
And you're the only one who has seen it, by the way.
Yeah, in the whole country. evidently. But, so yeah, this is the latest the film starring Vince Vaughn called Unfinished Business. And as the film opens, he is arguing with his boss, or at least his superior, played by Sienna Miller. He is apparently not happy with the treatment that he is getting at the company as far as some cutbacks in the salary are concerned. And it leads him to quitting in this kind of a Jerry Maguire-ish moment. He tries to get people to go along with him who are similarly getting screwed. The only two people he gets to come are the character played by Tom Wilkinson, a 67-year-old guy who is a very unhappy marriage, and a young guy played by Dave Franco, who seems to be you know, a few sandwiches short of a picnic. They decide to form their own company in the same vein as the company they just left, which in the movie is, I believe, the product they sell is called Schwarf, I believe, which is basically sort of the shaving, the remains of metal shavings that companies, you know, discard and whatnot. I know it all sounds terribly exciting, but that is what they sell, basically. So a year later, here they are, almost broke, not having much success with their company, but they have an opportunity with a possible new deal. And it involves them going to meeting after meeting and even leaving the country to go to Germany, where a lot of really crazy things are going on, including a gay fetish parade gathering. The G8 convention is in town. As a lot of things happening as they decide to find out whether or not this deal is for real or if they're being used basically as leverage against another company, their old company, as Sienna Miller is there also to possibly close this deal. So you have the three of them in Berlin with all this wacky stuff going on, and Tom Wilkinson is very interested in having an affair. Dave Franco character is on his very first business trip, or seemingly his very first trip anywhere. And he's going to try and enjoy, you know, whatever possible pleasures, including drinking and debauchery and sex, that he can possibly find out there as well. And we talked about Chappie being a very schizophrenic movie. I don't know if it's as schizophrenic as this, because this is a movie that sort of goes back and forth between being this film that, the way that, you know, it's being advertised, you know, sort of an old school Wedding Crashers,
right,
you know, kind of hard R-rated movie, and this sort of film with a kind of a heart to it in a way. Vince Vaughn's, you know, is not exactly playing the wacky riffing Vince Vaughn character that he's played in the past. He's got a family, and he's got an overweight son who's being bullied, and a young daughter who might be a bully herself. And this film was written by Steve Conrad,
who
has done some really interesting films in this sort of vein before. He wrote The Weatherman, which is a film that I think is really excellent.
The Promotion. It's a terrific movie.
A terrific movie, and that's the movie that this kind of wants to emulate. In a way, I mean, The Promotion didn't exactly, you know, it was an R-rated film, but it didn't really have that sort of, like, this misplaced, you know, like every, you know, it's like, oh, well, we don't have a joke here, let's throw in some boobs and some nudity,
right,
kind of thing. So it goes back and forth between these two elements, and neither of them mix at all. There are some chuckles here and there, most of them to be had by Dave Franco's idiocy, but when it's revealed pretty early exactly why Dave Franco is a few sandwiches short of a picnic, you kind of wonder exactly where the offensive meter, you know, sort of, you know, rings true on that. Mm. I mean, it's just, you kind of sit there just trying to figure out exactly what they were going for this movie. It's not very funny. It's like you said, it's a chuckle here, a chuckle there. But I mean, it's not good. It's not as bad as Delivery Man, which I think is the worst of the Vince Vaughn films. But this director, Ken Scott, Vince Vaughn needs to definitely get away from him, for starters, because, I mean, at the very least, this is one of the most poorly directed comedies I have seen in some time. And I've always said Todd Phillips is the worst comedy director on the planet. He's got some company with
okay.
the Ken Scott guy.
Okay. All right, so Unfinished Business, not good. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Maps to the Stars?
Okay. This is the newest film from David Cronenberg. And this is the first film he's actually admitted to actually filming inside of America. Appropriately, it's a story about Hollywood. And it's a story with kind of more of an ensemble piece than anything else. There were several different characters in Hollywood. Julianne Moore plays sort of a fading actress. She's you know pushing 50, and very much wants to do a new film that is a biography about her late mother, who was an actress. And then there's John Cusack, who plays kind of a self-help guru, who's actually connected to Julianne Moore by sort of being her massage therapist. He is married to Olivia Williams. And they have a son who is a very successful child actor, who is 13 years old and coming off a rehab stint. So he's about to do a sequel to one of his big hits, in sort of spearheading his comeback.
Yeah, the Bad Babysitter series.
Yes. Is it called Bad Babysitter or just The Babysitter?
No, Bad Babysitter.
Bad Babysitter, okay. And then there's another character thrown into the mix played by Mia Wasikowska, who has arrived into Hollywood ends up becoming the personal assistant to Julianne Moore's character. She's often driven around town by a possible romantic interest, a limo driver played by Robert Pattinson. Apparently Cronenberg likes to Robert Pattinson in limos, and he's demoting him as films go on. He's in the back of the limo in the last movie, now he's driving the limo.
He's in the back of the limo in the last movie getting prostate exams, and now he's driving.
That's Hollywood.
Yeah.
So you have these sort of these, you know, not so loosely interconnected vignettes, basically, between these characters. And it's, it's just, a story about Hollywood, in a way. It certainly has, obviously a negative connotation to the people who inhabit this world in a way. But I didn't find much here of interest or anything that the movie was saying, anything new about this particular, piece of real estate and the people who live there, if you will. I certainly get the idea that sort of the theme of the incestuous nature, if you will, of, of all these characters and the sort of the price of fame that they will seek. In front of the camera, especially behind it, but there's not a whole lot more going on in here. Even it has the sort of the elements of debauchery and whatnot, and it doesn't feel like Cronenberg's really throwing that in your face or trying to make a real point of it. There's sort of a casualness to some of the stuff that's going on. But ultimately, watching the film, it felt to me as if I was watching Greg Araki do his version of The Player. With the exception of The Player had all the name Hollywood people playing themselves in cameo roles throughout the movie. This movie likes to name drop everyone at the drop of a hat, if you will. And just because you are saying a lot of names and you're saying a lot of familiar names and even some of their more recent troubles, doesn't mean that you really have anything to say about them or the world that they live in. So Cronenberg, for me, has not done anything of interest since History of Violence, really going back that far. While I like this better than Cosmopolis, which I really kind of despised, I do not recommend this film at all.
Okay, Colin?
I liked it. but it is, I don't think Cronenberg's, MO is to, pick a group of people, whether it be Hollywood or stockbrokers or, people who have, car crash fetishes and make, a statement about them, that is, negative or, trying to hold them, take them to task for anything. He's more empathetic. I think he's more interested in their behavior from a anthropological standpoint or a sociological standpoint. I think that's more his thing. He's not a satirist, or not much of a satirist, I should say. And I think this movie, for a while as it was going, I wasn't quite sure if I was into it either. It kind of felt soap opera-y for a good middle chunk at the end. But when I saw what the movie was building up towards, then it started to feel more and more like a Cronenberg film. The kind of film that doesn't reveal itself. It reveals itself very slowly. Wasn't quite sure what these characters all had to do with one another until about the film you put the pieces together. Like, oh, really? This is what's going on. Okay. I'll keep watching. Moore is fantastic in the movie. Cusack is the best he's been in a long time.
In years. It's the best role he's had in years.
And I enjoyed the kid playing he's the actor who's going through his Justin Bieber, Shia LaBeouf phase. Just a nasty little SOB.
Yep.
I found myself enjoying this film. And by the end, I was quite pleased with the David Cronenberg movie that I saw. Yeah. So I do recommend it.
Yeah, I absolutely love this movie. I love everything about it. I think it's his best movie since History of Violence. I think it's better than The Player. I just, everything about this movie, I thought it was hilarious and twisted. There were times when I was watching it where I just was like, oh my God, did that just happen? Is that real? I thought the casting was spectacular, and I have a feeling that a lot of the Academy members who voted for Julianne Moore in Still Alice saw this movie because she's spectacular in it. And I just thought everything about it was great. It's twisted. It's weird. It's funny. You know, there are moments in this movie that were just like where I did double takes. It is Cronenberg through and through, without question. I think he handles the material the way that Cronenberg would handle the material. It becomes really about halfway through the movie. There were times when I was just like sitting, just laughing out loud. And like, wow. And then it gets really, you know, dark and twisted and kind of, and it has a very melancholy ending, to say the least. And what it says about Hollywood, I don't know if it's anything new, but it says it in an original fashion and in a very entertaining way. I thought this movie was great. Honestly, I don't know if I'll see a better movie this year. And I know it's only March, but it's clearly right now for me. Best film I've seen all year is Maps of the Stars. It's playing at the Music Box, and it is available on the VOD. But it's possible for me to like this movie more. I thought it was absolutely great, and I mean, I'm kind of a Cronenberg fan.
Yes,
kind of. So this was an actual joy to watch. I thought it was just great. So there you go. All right, what do we got next week, guys?
We got Cinderella next week.
Yeah.
And we have the latest film from Liam Neeson called Run All Night.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's.
Yeah.
From the director of Unknown and that stupid airplane movie.
Yeah, Nonstop.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So we got some Liam Neeson's next week.
Yeah,
all right.
Colin's interest in the movie just went down.
All right, Eric, Colin, thank you guys a lot, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, take care. There you go. There's Colin. There's Eric for the movie reviews, which happen every Monday morning.